How transparent is Manx politics? Manx Taxpayers Alliance spokesman Michael Josom called out unsuccessful LegCo candidate Gary Cluett for not being open about a £250 donation he made to one MHK's election campaign. In response, Gary Cluett has questioned who are the mystery backers of the Taxpayers Alliance. Does money influence the way we think and vote here? Is the Isle of Man too small to be troubled by such things? Are dark forces really plotting to buy your vote? Talking to Michael Josom, former MHK candidate on two occasions, was it?
Yep.
And also spokesperson for the Manx Taxpayers Alliance.
Yep, yep. And a whole bunch of other bits and pieces, whether it be with the, you know, volunteering at the stewards. And now, as of this week, a newly qualified netball umpire as well.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, very good. Well, I could reintroduce you as a netball umpire, but I suspect, because of the topic that we are going to talk about, which is transparency in politics, your involvement as a Keys candidate and in terms of the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is probably more relevant than umpiring netball matches. If we begin then by actually looking at transparency in politics, why do you think it is important to have transparency in politics? That's a good starting question, I suppose.
Yeah. So I think we need to be clear about what we're speaking about. We're speaking about two things. First of all, individual citizens, what they do with their own time. Citizens have a right to privacy, whereas governments have an obligation of transparency. And so the reason that governments have an obligation of transparency is for two reasons. First of all, it ensures that everything is done on the up. And second of all, it helps governments to make better decisions. And that is, having open discussion about different policy, different ideas is helpful because it means that more people on the Isle of Man are able to contribute to those discussions.
One of the reasons we're having this particular discussion is because you raised an issue in relation to one of the candidates in the Legislative Council election, Gary Cluett, who had provided relatively small sums, but sums of money to, in his words, or had at least offered, in his words, to several MHK candidates some financial support.
So that's news to me, Phil, that he's now offered to multiple candidates. I did not know that before you've just said that. In which case, I think that the simple point here is that if you are a person who is offered to pay money to multiple candidates and have actually given money to at least one member of the House of Keys as a donation, then it is obvious that when you are seeking their appointment to the Legislative Council, that should be done openly, should be done transparently, and it should be on the public record. And so before I raised questions about that last week, no one knew about it. No one, when you spoke to him here on this show a couple of weeks ago, there was no discussion of that. There was discussion of him making financial donations to various political causes in the US. And those causes and those donations are on the public record. So anyone can go to the Federal Electoral Commission in the US, their website, they can type in the name Gary Cluett, and they can see that he's donated between $8,000 and $9,000 to various candidates over the last few years. But unfortunately, that wasn't on the public record here in the Isle of Man.
And that was seemed at least to be a legislative error somewhere along the lines, because there was a clear view that all candidates needed to declare where any funding of a significant amount had come from. But then ultimately, when government went to publish this, they were told that this was in some way, it would be in breach of the rights of the people who donated the money.
So it is possible that these candidates were not forced to do so, but they should have done so voluntarily. And so, as far as I can tell, of the 65 candidates who stood at the general election in 2021, 64 of them did not publish this data publicly, proactively before the election. One did, and that was myself, in that that was available on the internet. You can go to my website, it was there. I published the data right at the beginning of the election in relation to the declaration of interest, because I just assumed that every other candidate was going to do so, because that was obviously the intention of the legislation. And the laws say that you had to declare it to the government. I just assumed that every other candidate would also publish those same declarations privately. Would they also publish those declarations publicly themselves? In many cases, many candidates did not receive any outside funding. In that, relatively wealthy candidates for members of the House of Keys may be able to entirely self-fund. Spending £4,000 or £5,000 might not be a big deal for them. But I'm not a particularly wealthy person, and I'm very grateful to receive support from funding from different people, including, by the way, from my father. He very kindly donated some money, and so I published that back on, whatever the date was, back in September 2021, before the election was held, so that anyone could see it. In addition, I published the full declaration of interest that dated, 4 pages or something of content. Because I just assumed everyone else was going to, they didn't. That's a choice for them. And I accept there might be a legislative error, but I think there's a moral and professional failure.
Would you have expected, though, when you stood and filled in all those forms, that all this stuff would have been made public?
I expected it to be public. Yeah. That's why I published it myself, because I just assumed the government was going to publish it anyway.
Yeah.
And so I just assumed that that's what every candidate would do. And I also, incidentally, assumed that the journalists at Manx Radio and the newspapers and elsewhere would ask the candidates for a copy of this stuff. I just assumed that was what was going to happen, so I figured I might as well get ahead of the game and put it out there.
Yeah, yeah. And now, of course, that we know that this information isn't going to be made publicly available, presumably those sorts of questions will be asked in the future. In relation then to...
Hang on, just on that, Phil.
Yeah.
In that, the government did not release this data during the election campaign. However, in late 2021, I started asking the government for records of the donations that had been made to the different candidates. After 6 months of repeated requests, I was able to get it. There wasn't anything of particular interest at that time, and so I just left it in the email, didn't think of it, until a couple of weeks ago, when I learned that one of the donors who'd given money to one of the successful members of the House of Keys was standing for Tynwald, for standing for the Legislative Council. They did not publicly disclose it proactively, and so then I thought that the right thing to do is to let people know. And you are entirely right to say that £250 is not a big chunk of money. But I guess if you can't get the little things right, how can you be trusted for the big things, especially on a situation where the job of the Legislative Council is to scrutinise the legislation that's coming through?
And effectively, I think anyone listening to this programme would wholly agree that candidates who receives funds from people who potentially could be seeking influence, that money should be declared and publicly explained, so that people can understand what influences there potentially are on each individual politician. You'd agree with that?
Yeah, and that's exactly why I publish all that stuff.
So then, I mean, the obvious question, which a number of people responded with, when you published or you made your sort of social media tweets, posts, whatever, the question that a number of people wonder in relation to you is, you are spokesperson for the Manx Taxpayers Alliance. That is very clearly an agency which is trying to influence public opinion. I mean, I'm right so far.
And also, I work for other and connected with other organisations that are trying to influence public opinion. Mm. So, for example, at the time of the election, I was also an employee of the Manx Cooperative Society, who run various public campaigns relating especially to fair trade, but also to, one of the things that we did locally some couple of years ago was in relation to protecting key workers from attacks, physical attacks, and which became a bit of an issue. An issue like that. Various other candidates are involved in various other organisations, and that's why it's really important to disclose those sort of things.
And then I suppose we must come back to the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, because this is a question that you... I wouldn't say you necessarily dodge the question, but you never quite give the answer that a lot of people on the island are looking for, and that is, who actually are the core and the key backers of the Manx Taxpayers Alliance? And I suppose the reason this question keeps coming back is because There are sort of hints that maybe one of the main backers has strong links to one of the parties in the UK. Maybe one of the backers is a prominent developer on the island. And these sorts of things, would you not say that these sorts of things matter when it comes to trying to influence public opinion, to know that you know, people backing campaigns are you know, potentially looking to influence public debate, possibly even for their own benefit?
So I think it is obvious that anyone who supports the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, when you know the goals of keeping taxes low, high levels of government transparency, and a fair tax, is obviously going to be interested in those three things. That means that obviously any person who wants to support those organisations broadly subscribes to those three aims. Now, if you are expecting me to come on here and give you a list of names and donors, you and I know, Phil, that that's illegal. You and I know that the data protection rules prevent
perhaps illegal in the same way that government found that it couldn't publish the information it gathered in relation to backing parliamentary candidates. But you published that information, the parliamentary stuff, willingly and openly. Why would backers of the Manx Taxpayers Alliance not be willing to be clear about who they are?
So they are welcome to do so. And so, for example, one of the other directors Tony Nichols, you know, that we're both on the public record there. If you want to have a conversation about what is permitted around the data protection legislation, then I have two pieces of advice. First of all, you really should redo the data protection training that Manx Radio must provide to all of its staff, because is obviously the case, you know, to the point where, Phil, your listeners won't know this, but when you now come and sign in to attend the building, they have some sort of, you know, security protected form where you can't even see the names of the other people who have entered the building in the last day, right? And so, first of all, there's no real meaningful doubt. But if you don't believe Michael Joseph, then I'd encourage you, chat to a data protection lawyer, because this is really the core of the GDPR laws.
And this is the answer that you've came back with on regular occasions when asked about
it. Yeah, because
this.
It's true.
And it is true, but there are lots of things in the world that are true.
Well, then if it's true, why do you keep asking it, mate?
But there are lots of things in the world that are true. It is also true that the public feel as though they ought to know who is supporting, you know, or at least if there are big property developers on the island or people who have strong links with other countries' political parties, that they ought to know that when an organisation like the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is promoting some of its campaigns, particularly when it's campaigning for things like transparency in government.
So I think it's, you know, we've just had an exchange there where we agreed that it's illegal for me to list out a name, right? And so I don't know how you expect me to answer a question in a different way.
Well,
what is possible, Phil, is that the law maybe or should be or could be changed in the future. And of course, if the law is changed and different in the future, then of course we would abide by the law, right? That's the thing, right? And so in that sense, you're asking me a question where you and I and anyone who's worked at a business in the last 5 years where we go through the data protection training, we all know it is illegal for me to answer the question the way you want me to. But in terms of the more substantial thing is, you know, of course people who support the Manx Taxpayers Alliance, of course they're going to have a certain view on such issues. And because I think that, you know, that idea of recognising that citizens have a right to privacy, but on the other hand, government has an obligation to transparency. And those are two different things.
And you don't think there's any sort of grey areas in relation... I mean, you know, I accept the points that you make, so I'm not willfully trying to ask the same question over and over again, but if it was a political party, a registered political party in the Isle of Man, if Manx Taxpayers Alliance was a political party, and you know, for many people looking at it, it has all the hallmarks of a political party. It's certainly a political lobbying organisation. As a political party, it would have to disclose financial backing.
So it's a good question, Phil. Mm. Hang on a tick here. I don't know if this is going to work very well for radio.
Right.
I did not really expect this. But what I have, can if I have on my email, a record of the financial disclosures of the three political parties in the Isle of Man, which is the Greens Party, the Labour Party, and the Liberal Venner Party, which I continue to serve as secretary. So, yeah, so I was interested in the issue of the disclosures. And so I have previously requested those disclosures. Manx Radio should do the same, by the way. I think it might be an interesting story in itself. Here we are. Request for Isle of Man registered political party accounts. So this is 18th of May 2022. An email here from the Central Registry. You can read them. Her name, I don't think it really matters. From at gov.im. Dear Mr. Joseph, I have attached a copy of the most recent account submitted by each of the political parties of the Isle of Man as requested. This is almost 12 months ago. So here's the Isle of Man Green Party accounts for the financial year made up until the 10th of August 2021.
In essence, it doesn't tell you anything.
That'll be the short version. But yeah. I don't want you to just take Michael Joseph's word for it. You know, I want to show you the document. Like this is it. And so I've got to say these documents relate to the period March 2021 or August 2021. So this is prior to the election. So here we are. I've just loaded here. This is the Manx Labour Party accounts for the years 31 March 2021. And you know, it has a list of the office bearers, their change, had a change in treasurer during this, well, immediately after this period. So you have here, they have fundraising of £1,500 for the relevant year. They spent a little bit of money on the UK Labour Party. It has no identification of any of the people who are there. The Liberal Vanham, which I do serve as the secretary of, and so I assume I've signed these papers at some stage in the past. And so here it has a list of the income that they've received of 2021, £500 of donations received, £195 of membership fees. Again, no identification of any of the donors or members, of course. Here's the Greens Party, which is made up to the 10th of August 2021, and that shows that you have membership fees of £1,300 for the year ended August 2021. Donations for the 2 years, a total of just under £3,000, with £2,850. There was a campaign contribution that they made during the time paid out. Some, you know, website that they purchased. Payments to a friend of the earth, Paul Allen, Endeavour. And again, has the total amount that they received. And again, it has no identification of any people that have donated to the party. So I think that your question about the Manx Taxpayers Alliance is fundamentally sound. But the answer is that the Manx Taxpayers Alliance gives is the same as the Greens Party, Liberal Van and Manx Labour Party gives, and also any other charity, any other organisation that is subject to data protection rules, including Manx Radio, by the way.
So we could equally find the Manx Taxpayers Alliance accounts?
I assume so, yeah. I haven't checked, but I assume they're publicly available.
I think in that fairly long-winded way, we have identified that transparency in politics is far from transparent. Government would probably say, though, that it is more transparent now than it's ever been. Do you think that would be a fair thing to say?
Well, it's like having the best sushi at a service station in Wales. Like, that's, you know, okay, better than the rest, but like, come on, like, that's not an endorsement of quality. And so, you know, I think we also need to be conscious that we're not talking about huge chunks of money here. And we should not dissuade people from being engaged in the political process. I had a friend who was keen to donate and support my election campaign during the election. I said to him, if you do, we're going to have to disclose this publicly. And he therefore decided not to, because he didn't want to be publicly identified and so on. And so there is a concern, and I don't know how much to balance it, in that, you know, ultimately citizens do have a right to privacy. Political expenditure and political campaign is an important part of having freedom of speech. I am obviously someone who stands by what he says publicly, very obviously, in a very, very high-profile manner. But there are a lot of people who have concerns about such things and the risk that might accrue to them and to their family. It is not unknown for people to be concerned about those risks and to take them, that that very carefully, especially when some people are concerned about issues of cancel culture and so on. And so we need to mitigate this, but all of the organisation here in the Isle of Man comply with the law. We all do what we're asked to do. If the law changes, I'm sure that, you know, everyone will change their behaviour to lift it up to that.
Would you be worried? I mean, we've touched on the US, United States of America elections, which, you know, many independent bodies who assess these things would suggest that the United States of America's democracy is far from perfect as a result of significant amounts of private money going into both sides of the generally two-horse race that is the United States sort of political system. Would you be concerned if that kind of moneyed influence would start to impact on Isle of Man politics?
So I think you've got to recognise that the influence of money, I think, is substantially overstated. You know, just take the most expensive election contest in the world, which is the presidential election. I guess in 2020, the guy who spent more money won. In 2016, the woman who spent more money lost. And so in that sense, I don't think there's a strong, you know, effect there, especially here in the Isle of Man, where you can chat to candidates so commonly and easily. Essentially, all the candidates here in the Isle of Man, you know, spent, you know, between £4,000 and £5,000, and, you know, most of them did anyway. And so in that sense, you know, I don't think this is an issue of money, but rather an issue of ideas. And so that's why I guess that, you know, when organisations like the Manx Taxpayers Alliance or when Michael Joseph does things like this, you provide the documents, you provide the truth, you provide the sources, because the truth has no allegiance. The truth can't be bought by money. And so that's why, you know, take, for example, this thing blow up with this Legislative Council candidate, is that, you know, that's why I publish documents. All the sources are there. No one denies any of the central tenets of the issues. You know, I do know that some people argued that there was not a payment made, but rather a donation made. And if you want to pass the difference between giving someone money and a payment, then go be it. But I don't think there's any substantial dispute about the core facts here.
You don't think that money can influence how people perceive the truth then?
And look, maybe at the edge, but I think true communication is through action. And that is, I think, far more persuasive and far more powerful than anything anyone says.
That was Manx Taxpayers Alliance spokesman Michael Joseph. Gary Cluett is a relative newcomer to Manx politics and recently failed to win a LegCo seat. Do you think the intervention of Michael Joseph, in which he called you out for not being transparent, cost you the chance to become a member of the Legislative Council?
Oh, absolutely not. I'm quite happy with the outcome. It's about what I predicted. The reality is I'm new here. And I didn't get a seat. That's fine. You make the offer and they either accept it or they don't. But the reality is there was, you know, another side of this that's, to me, is even more valuable. A month ago, I knew two politicians that I'd had conversations with and two others that I had sort of worked with but never really had any conversations with. Now I know a whole lot of them that I've had fairly in-depth conversations with, and I think we'll be having some more in-depth conversations about various things. So from that perspective, I'm quite sanguine with the way it's turned out.
Is it fair, certainly Michael Joseph very clearly pointed out that there was a discrepancy in as much as you didn't declare that you had funded one of the Keys members or you part funded their election campaign. Should you have declared any funding that you'd given to candidates before you stood?
If I'd actually remembered, if it'd been on my radar, I certainly would have. It's not it is such a small amount as far as I'm concerned, and it was for a previous election. I mean, it really didn't even register when I did it. It wasn't as if I was planning for weeks or months to stand for LegCo. I had no intention of, even when the nominations were announced. It was that day I started getting some phone calls and emails and messages and things saying, you should run. And it took me another 2 or 3 days to make the decision and get up the courage to go and broach the subject with my wife, who I thought would go ballistic. She didn't. So, no, it wasn't planned. The reality is, I've been a political donor, certainly in the United States, a big political donor for quite a number of years. And I have never had to disclose anything. Because the way the system works there, and if I'd thought about it, I would have just assumed it worked the same here, is that the candidates make the disclosures, and they disclose the names and how much, you know, above certain thresholds, and those are made public. And I just assumed that the same happened here. You know, Joni Farragut had declared it, and that, I mean, Michael did highlight an issue is, you know, we expect now government to be a little bit more joined up than it is. And that once candidates make those disclosures available to the Elections Commission, it should be it should automatically go on their register of interests.
And certainly I think that was the initial intention. That was the whole point of making the declaration.
Yes.
Was so that this would be made public.
Yes.
However, subsequently, the legal advice that the government, because the government, effectively the chief secretary, is the returning officer for the island. So it's possibly a strange situation we have there, in that the returning officer is also the head of the civil service, which I'm not sure if that was in one of the less reputable countries of the world, that would necessarily be a good thing. However, it is the case, yes. And the legal advice that returning officer got was you can't actually publish people's names unless they have given their permission to have their names published. So as a result, none of the names were published.
Yeah, but I mean, how does it? Because after this all blew up, I went and looked at, I think I looked at every MLC and every MHK's register of interests, and there's nothing in any of them about any donations that they receive for any of their elections. I think Laurie Hooper had made a point on social media that it wasn't on anybody's radar. I don't know. Perhaps this is the first time it's ever happened. I honestly don't know. So if it's a GDPR issue, which Mr. Joseph has continually used as an excuse for not releasing information, if it's a GDPR issue that they can't disclose the list of nominators, well, then how come Ms. Farragut was able to put my name up on the register of interests rather than, donation from person? I don't know. It's clear there's something needs to change. I've long had a problem with money in politics. It's corrosive. Money buys influence. Okay. As I said, for the last 30 odd years when I've lived in the United States, I've got involved in politics and I have donated large amounts of money. And it's supposed to be regulated. For example, during the election campaign, the 2016 campaign where, no, it wasn't 2016, it was 2008, sorry, where Obama thing, I donated the maximum allowed for the primary election where he became the nominee, and that was about $5,000-something. And then when the presidential election came along later in the year, I donated the other 5,000, which was the maximum. And that's all declared. You can actually go online and see those. But I was able to donate 10 times that through other, what they call dark money, through corporate interests, through political action committees and various other things. And people say it's not... I've heard people say, well, it's not really influential. I mean, but it was noticeable in 2010 in the United States after the Supreme Court issued the Citizens United ruling, which essentially said that corporate bodies have First Amendment rights. And oh, by the way, there's really no restrictions on how much they can raise. So companies, I mean, they donate money anonymously. I've seen it. I know companies that have done this. They have paid bonuses to their employees, hundreds or thousands of employees, and because again, there are, even for local elections, most states and local authorities have campaign limits for reporting. And it's normally, it's anywhere from $50 to $250, it has to be reported. So if you live in a state, and I think California at the time was about $100 or maybe $200, if you donated just under that amount, it didn't get reported. So what would be, if you've got a company with 10,000 employees and you get 1,000 of them to donate $195, it never gets reported. You give them a $250 bonus, so it covers the tax, or a $300 bonus, so it covers the tax and a meal out for the family type thing. Not anymore. But there are ways around all of these things. And I was never a United States citizen. I could never vote in the United States. I couldn't even vote in local elections, municipal elections. I was invited to join government boards because of some technical and business expertise I had. I couldn't join them because I wasn't a U.S. citizen. So essentially, I was excluded from the political system, which is fine. If you're not willing to become a citizen, then you have things. And yet, I used to joke, but it wasn't true, that I had more rights in the United States than any voting citizen that I knew, simply because of my political donations. Okay, for example, I donated a lot of money to Patty Murray, who was one of the Washington senators. I could pick up the phone and call her, and all you had to do is tell them you were a donor, gave them the name, and she'd call me back. I mean, this does not happen if you are a normal citizen. They look after their donors. And it's
so, I mean, bringing it back then to the Isle of Man situation, and I should say Michael Joson was clear that he was the only one of the candidates who did declare where his funding came from. That's what he claims. Yeah. I have no reason to doubt him.
No.
I'll declare now that I never had any support for any of my election campaigns. Mm-hmm. Never sought it, and it was never offered either. Mm-hmm. But are things changing, do you think, in terms of Manx politics? And I know you've only been here for a very short time, mm-hmm. but are we starting to see the need for money to be part of Manx political campaigning?
No, I think we're starting to see the need for more controls on the way money is spent in politics. I made, in the 2021 election, I looked at the candidates, and there were several of them that were what I would consider economically disadvantaged. They just didn't have a lot of money. And I've long felt that in a true democracy, everyone should have equal access to the political system. I would prefer all private money out of the election. I would much prefer publicly funded elections. And, you know, you have to have and maybe what you do is you have to have increased the threshold to become a nominee and various things like that. But it should be publicly funded so that it is all disclosed. It's all above board and nobody can spend any more than anybody else. Now, we do have on the island, we do have a limit on how much you can spend. I think approximately, if I remember right, it was about just over £2,000 plus about 59p or whatever it is per voter, registered voter in your constituency. So, I mean, in the scheme of things, it's a very, very small amount. However, just like the United States, let's say I set up a company, okay, and I hire a couple of employees, and I put them on the payroll, and what they do is, they may have other tasks, but what they do is they spend almost full time campaigning for themselves for a candidate. Now, is that election spending? Should that be declared? Okay, that troubles me. Take another example. I set up a company or an entity. That's purpose is influencing the political voice. It's an advocacy group. It pays people to campaign on behalf of a cause or an election, a candidate. Is that campaign spending? If a political party is dumping money into an election, is that campaign spending?
And I suppose most people would say, most people could reasonably understand that political parties, if they're spending money during an election campaign, that clearly is campaigning. That's what they're there for. Yeah. That's their whole purpose. But as you say, it becomes more difficult when you have one issue group specific mm-hmm. campaigns. Potentially, I mean, Michael Josem raised the co-op. I mean, the co-op does good works around the island, and Michael Josem is there or has been employed to work for them to do certain things. Mm-hmm. So. I mean, you're not saying that the Isle of Man Co-op is in some way some devious political force, are you?
No, clearly not. I mean, this is the discussion that needs to be had. The Chamber of Commerce is kind of an advocacy group as well. I mean, there are quite a few of them. And, you know, so there needs to be a clear delineation of what is it, you know, where is the involvement. Now, some of these things get involved on an ongoing basis on various issues that affect their members or whatever, or you know, or causes that they believe in. And then there are others that get directly involved sort of in and around election time. There's no easy answer. And then, you know, again, I've followed campaign finance in the United States for many, many years over the it's cat and mouse. There's two things. One is Congress keeps trying to close the loopholes, but not quite all of them, because they are addicted to the money. You can't get elected. I mean, the 2020 campaign, presidential campaign, it was something like $16 billion was spent on that. Across the various things. I mean, that's just an outrageous amount of money.
But it's not necessarily the person who spends the most that gets elected, is it?
No, but it goes a long way. And it's in a lot of cases not. It does help, because you can see and track the amount of money, for example, that's spent in the last week on television ads and things like that, how the polls sort of get swayed backwards and forwards. I mean, the bottom line is most people don't pay an awful lot of attention to politics. They got to get on with their lives. And so they listen to the news or the ads or the talk shows and things, and you know, that's how they form their opinion. So, yeah, money does count. But the other issue you've got is, so when you run an election, there are candidates running for office, all right? So if you control the expenditures on the candidates or their campaigns, the next thing you do is you have a company or individuals that start campaigning indirectly that don't necessarily support a candidate. So for example, you know, in Manx politics, take a thing like that, either as a company or as an individual, I could conceivably have a million brochures printed or posters printed, take out radio ads to stop a certain person from getting elected. I'm not contributing to anybody's campaign. Where are the limits? And as I say, I don't know what the history of campaigning, financing campaigns is. I simply got involved in the 2021 election because there were at least, I believe it was four candidates that I saw as they should have a voice, and I knew they were, well, at least some, most of them were kind of struggling to stay afloat in terms of things like that. So I offered to help. I believe it was four people. Ms. Farrago was the only one that took me up on. The others, you know, it was things they decided they didn't need it at the time, and it never happened. So again, I don't know if other people, nobody else has ever disclosed it, and I've not, you know, I suppose you could freedom of information it out of the Electoral Commission, but you know, who's got time for that sort of stuff?
Yeah. And you know, the whole well, I suppose the whole way in which we live our lives, you know, we are significantly influenced by whether it be private companies advertising their mm-hmm. products or government promoting certain things. You know, mm-hmm. we've got public health, for example, regularly putting out information about, you know, what we should do to live more healthy lives. Mm-hmm. That, you know, information campaigns are mm-hmm. with us and are very much a part of everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not something that we should be embracing, actually having properly funded, properly promoted campaigns so that the public can get a better understanding maybe of the different issues?
The downside with that is you exclude more people because of the difference in wealth, you know, relative wealth between people who are going to run. And that's why, yeah, I'm happy to spend, you know, if our current limits are, you know, 2,000 plus whatever, I'm happy for it to be increased by fivefold or tenfold so they can actually afford to take out ads and run things like that, but have it publicly funded. And, you know, and because the taxpayers say, oh, we don't want to pay for this. Well, I think we have to do something, because what 2021 showed was that you could drive a truck through current election law. And if somebody is of a mind to do so, there's nothing to stop them. So I think we need to start, you know, we need to start thinking about it. The Electoral Commission needs to start looking at ways that the system can be abused, defining exactly what political speech is, defining what level of volunteering during normal business hours by employees needs to be disclosed as a campaign contribution and at what rate and various things like that. I mean, I just, the conversation has to be held because from what I've seen elsewhere, once money starts to come in, it'll start pouring in, and it needs to be carefully considered as to how we allow it. So it's not an easy problem, and it's one that doesn't really raise the thing. After after the 2021 election, I had started writing a critique and a series of proposals to the Electoral Commission. And of course, I've got too busy doing other things and fallen by the wayside. But I will probably resurrect that and complete it and get it submitted with some suggestions and things like that. Because as I say, we've seen a very, very small piece right now of a hole in the system, and it just needs to be plugged. But more importantly, this whole thing about reporting, you should only have to report once. The recipient should have, well, under the current system, the recipient is reporting. That needs to be, I mean, they have to resolve this. I mean, because if GDPR, which has become an excuse for anything that people don't want to do, if GDPR is going to prevent us from publishing the name of donors, then you're never going to have transparent elections. I mean, it's you know, how does that work?
And how important really is all this? Because you know, there's a fair argument that the public are reasonably well educated, and they can see through you know, when there's a campaign and a lot of money behind it, surely they can see that you know, the truth remains the same regardless of how much money is thrown at trying to convince you otherwise.
I don't necessarily agree. You know, in the cases we have right now, it's somewhat amateurish. There are slick professional outfits out of there that could come in and nobody would be any the wiser that they were actually campaigning. I mean, you know, propaganda is an art. One that governments attempt to become masters of all over the world. But I'll tell you, there are private organizations and things that are far more adept at it than most governments are. And so the voters and citizens are influenced by what they see. I mean, you know, I can spend £1,000 and acquire software that will set up. So social media bot farms, email, things like that, that can put out innocuous messages. I mean, it's subliminal advertising in a lot of respects that can influence things. Because, you know, a lot of people get their news on social media now. And if you see a news item or something that's purported to be a news item, you know, especially on the Isle of Man, and it's got 500 likes and positive comments and things like that, it's like, oh, that must be a valid opinion, a valid thing. I mean, that can be created in a back room by, you know, one fellow sitting there in his underwear and and a computer. It's a problem. It's a problem. It's not unique here. It's more advanced in other countries, and I would just hate to see it become more advanced here. But ultimately, money becomes endemic unless you leave it. And if money did not work in politics, why would everybody be? Why would companies? Why would political action committees? Why would these groups be spending these huge amounts of money? Because I can tell you now, one of the hardest things in the world to do is raise money for political campaigns. I mean, in the United States, they have these guys called super bundlers who, you know, you go and you write a $50,000 check or whatever, and they bundle them and they get 10 million or 20 million for a particular candidate and things like that. And, it's an indirect tie, but at the end of the day, that super bundler has very, very good inside access to people in power. And you know, the other thing is, you have to understand that most of these groups, when you look at campaign finance records for corporate spending, they don't bet on one candidate. They fund both sides of the farm. I mean, it's, you know, whoever gets in owes them. And you know, if money didn't talk, nobody would be bothering doing it. And as I say, the biggest problem in the United States today is as a result of Citizens United, where as an individual, there are quite a few constraints on how much you can donate per campaign, per candidate, per issue, per whatever. Corporate spending is pretty much untapped, and that is a huge, huge problem. I think it's perverted democracy in the United States. And as I say, it's early days here, but I think there are things we need to look at, because as I say, we're starting to see there are potentially flaws in the system, and maybe I am the first person to actually donate, you know, hard cash to a candidate, and yeah, it should have been disclosed. But as I say, nowhere else that I know of that does finance reporting do the donors. Report. It's up to the candidates, the campaigns, to report that, and then it becomes publicly available.
And certainly that has been the intention, I think, of the system, but yeah. For whatever reason, it's not been possible on this occasion.
Yeah.
So are we in a fortunate position then that money hasn't been a big influencer in Isle of Man elections so far, do you think?
I honestly don't know. I suspect not, but I honestly don't know. And you say without the records and things, you don't know. I mean, the biggest limitation here is the fact that the candidates can only spend or legally spend so much up to a finite amount based on their constituency. And I think that's probably reasonably clear, unless, you know, people are falsifying their things, which is an offense. But we're entering the new game of, okay, organizations, companies or whatever, now entering the fray and funding somebody to campaign. And, you know, is that a donation or not? I don't know. Well, I have my opinion, but it's worth a conversation. I think the 2021 issue was never about direct donations to Mr. Joseph. The whole controversy was the funding and the opaqueness of the Manx Taxpayer Alliance. And from what I mean, it is what it is.
That was unsuccessful LegCo candidate Gary Cluett. Are you concerned about the influence money could be having on Manx elections? Do you think that, regardless of how much money is thrown at campaigning, you know enough about politics not to be swayed? Should tighter controls be placed on political campaigning, or do you think well-funded campaigns would help you better understand Manx politics? Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn, Gorn Amayu. Thanks for listening.